Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History and its Memorabilia on the Gridiron Greats Publishing and Broadcasting Network. In conjunction with Slick Enterprises, we're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. And I'm Bob Slick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats Magazine is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia. And you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, who's a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian, specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon. Mr. Joe Squires,
sure.
Welcome to the show this evening.
Captain, so good to be here again. Seems like we have a good rhythm coming, you know, or going on with the way we're rattling shows off.
We're back with another show. And at this time of recording, we just got done with the latest issue of Gridiron Greats Magazine, our fall issue number 70. It's at the printer. It will be mailed over the next few days, and hopefully by the end of next week, everybody will have their copies and be reading it, talking about it, looking at it. And I'm going to lead off our little discussion tonight, our pregame, with an article you wrote, which I thought was very, very interesting in its analysis on what is the most popular football card set from decade, from overall, and or from wherever you want to start. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you.
I can't be the only one. If you're listening to our Gridiron podcast, you've got to have the same euphoria, a child at Christmas running down the steps and seeing all your presents, as as an adult we do when we open up the mailbox and see Swick Enterprises in the upper left-hand corner of a large white envelope. It's amazing. I love it. So, and I love writing for Gridiron. It's just one of those things. I mean, and it's just, just about anyone listening could crank out 2-3 pages on something they're passionate about, a football set they love. Little idiosyncrasies in the hobby, it's so therapeutic. The article I just wrote, the most popular football set, and about a decade ago, somebody was talking about what the best set was, the best set. You get all these arguments from 48 Leaf, you know, the rookie power, the Chickles with the Nagurski, 52 Bowman large, 65 tops, 77 tops, because it's got the large and card. all the way down. And all of these arguments, and this is a decade ago, I was like, well, how can you quantify what the most popular set is, what the best set is? Well, if somebody likes the set, they'll collect it. So wouldn't a number of registries, number of people who have registries for a set be an indication of what the most popular set is? And so I just went on PSA and how many sets were being collected of each, or how many people were collecting each set. Then a couple years later, I did it again, just out of curiosity. I built a spreadsheet. 3 years later, I did it again, and I just did it. So I had 3 or 4 data points on most sets of what they were. And spoiler alert, the 1955 Topps All-American set, consistently the number one set. Second place was like whoever's behind Jerry Rice in receiving yards, just a distant second. Usually the 55 mm-hmm. Topps AA led by at least 30 to 40% over number two. So pretty surprising, but obviously a very, very popular set.
It's interesting. I looked at my notes on the 55 All-American set during the week since I knew you had it in the article where we were going to talk about it. I didn't start that set basically until I had 4 cards from the set, all commons. And I didn't finish that set until 1996, believe it or not. And I kept looking for the 4 horsemen. My 4 horsemen is basically BG. It's, it's a used card. I'm not overly concerned with it. But I need a bunch of upgrades in that set. But I always thought when I started collecting it, that was a brutal set to try to put together because you just didn't see them. You didn't find them. And it was kind of opposite. You would see the stars, but you wouldn't see the commons anywhere. So it was like an inverse collected set where, you collected the stars first and then kept looking for the commons to try to finish the set. It's only a 100-card set on top of it. So, I could see in your article, to me, it is still, and I think it always will be a set in demand, and it'll always be a set that people want to collect, because it's just classic. It's a classic vintage set.
Well, and there's a lot of quote-unquote rookie cards in there. Don Hudson's rookie card is a 55 Topps All-American. About 5 years ago, John Spano and I did an article in Gridiron on the Chickle set. And I had a friend of mine fabricate what a 35 Chickle card would look like if Hudson had one. And I love that fabrication. We have a text chain. There's a bunch of us football nerds. I have it labeled as football nerds in my phone. Text back and forth. And I threw that card out the other day. But no, it's got the Fats Henry, the Mel Hine. There's a Red Grange card in there, a Jim Thorpe, the 4 Horsemen, like you said. All these are very popular sets. 100 cards is easy to collect. You can pick up a common card. You can pick up a common PSA 8 for, $50. So tough to put together. You're going to bump up against, about 10 Hall of Famers and, 4 Horsemen, like Bob said. They're going to cost you a pretty penny, but it's not too tough. But almost 150 people put together have registries on that set in some way, but a very popular set.
That's amazing. That's amazing. It always keeps its popularity. I'm sure. I can't see it going away anytime soon. But again, you're right in the second and third runner ups. There's always going to be debate about it, and I think it's more debate about when you, as a collector, started collecting.
Yep.
For me, all the cards from the 1960s are my favorites. Whereas somebody who's started collecting in 1978, 79, they're always going to like the 78, 79, 80, 81 sets for, their most second and third popular and favorite sets at same time. Interesting.
Did you notice the pattern? Did you notice the pattern? Most of the most popular sets were from the 60s and 70s. 48 Leaf didn't even break top 25, I think. 35 Chickle wasn't in there. It was 72 Tops. It was, 68, 69 Tops. Surprised me because my beloved 84 Tops. I love the 84 and 79 Tops, probably my 2 favorite sets. and didn't even crack the top 25. You know, I sent that article to you to kind of review, and you added a line in there where it's like, you know, you collect what you grew up with. I mean, and you're spot on. I mean, your first pack, 65 Phillies, 65 Tops. So, I mean, that's going to be what you migrate to. So 55 Tops All-American. If you're a, you know, 10-year-old kid collecting that, you're 80 years old right now. I mean, I think that's more, I think it's more, it shows the popularity of 55AA, you know, just that it's a pretty wide sweeping set, that it's 100 cards rather than you've got a bunch of 75 and 80 year old people out there collecting it. So just shows how popular it is.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
But
the,
we gotta,
now you also paralleled something, what we were talking about too, about unopened material and pieces of memorabilia that have lineage to it. So let's talk a little bit about that too.
Well, last week we talked about, you know, Huggins has, you know, an auction ending tomorrow, and it is a sealed 20 wax pack 1881 Topps football. Just never seen one before. How many more sealed cases are there out there? I mean, this is a unicorn and a very popular set. And it's interesting. And every once in a while you see BBC, you know, put FASC from a sealed case. We had Steve Hart on as a guest, about 6 months ago, and he brought this up too. If you send them a case and they open it, they will designate your wax packs when they grade them as FASC, from a sealed case. And it got me wondering, I mean, what premium do people put on wax packs from a sealed case versus just normal wax packs? I mean, because there's got to be a premium. You know, it's not tampered with if the case is good and you open it up. I mean, and, you know, I guess versus a normal 81 Topps wax box, where it's possible, if you really know what you're doing, you can slip one by the goalie of Steve Hart and possibly, you know, collate wax packs, et cetera, and put them in there. So, I mean, you know, how much of a premium goes from a sealed case? It's kind of interesting. And, you know, you don't collect wax, and you definitely don't collect, you know, sealed graded wax. So it's more of a, just one of those things I was curious about, because in this Huggins auction is also a 81 Topps wax pack. So, I mean, you'd think that if you took the 81 Topps wax pack box and multiplied it by 20, that would be what the case would go for. Maybe a slight premium, a couple points, you know, for it to be a case, but, you know, also not many people can afford to take down 20 cases at a time. So maybe a, you know, a slight dip. I mean, who knows, but it'll be curious to see a case and a wax box, you know, both authenticated, go in the same auction and see what the ratio is, what the premium people put on sealed cases. I mean, what was it? Three months ago, an 86 Lear basketball case went, and it went for $1.3 million or something like that.
Yeah, it's just mind-boggling to see what at one time was considered junk wax for a couple seasons after, because everybody wanted to get rid of them. And you had the infamous black line through the box, so you knew it was return. And I still remember those black line wax boxes at shows for $5, and dealers couldn't even give them away. I mean, it was just amazing. And I still remember to this day, I had a 1986 wax box, and I think I ended up selling it for like $140, some ridiculous figure at the time. And I said to myself, I paid basically whatever it was, 13 and change for the box wholesale, and I just made $140 on it. You know what I mean? And it was just mind-boggling. But again, if I had known what I know,
nearly $3,000 now, Bob.
I would have just bought every conceivable wax box and wax pack that was out there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So anyways, get back to what you were saying. You know, the premium that's paid on these items is becoming astounding in a way to see where these prices are going. And, you know, it's just amazing to me to see. And again, less and less out there, and yeah. it's commanding the premium. Go ahead.
Less and less. You nailed it. I mean, and you were and I were talking before the show. It's also on eBay. I collect ticket stubs of Red Grange, and one of the premiums, one of the really sought after ticket stubs and program is from his last college game, and I have several of these ticket stubs. I have one unused ticket stub from the game, and I love it. Well, probably about 2 years ago, I noticed another unused ticket stub from the game, the last college game, and I was like, "Oh, that's awesome!" And I've been watching it. Well, about a year ago, I noticed that this eBay unused ticket stub is the seat right next to my unused ticket stub. So suddenly
wow.
you have a pair side by side seats that weren't used, and it's pretty damn cool. So I mean, you and I were talking
wow.
prior to the show. What premium do collectors put on unused tickets? And to me, it's a pretty good premium. And then, what premium would you put on ticket stubs that are the seat next to it? I've got about
right.
four or five
right.
of those, ticket stubs, seat right next to it. That's pretty cool. And I'm just this last
Your
game
could be,
ticket stub has been on eBay for like $2,000 for 2 years, and I refuse to pay that much just so I can have a side by side seat. So
yeah. But that's pretty neat, though. How many can you actually collect? Can you collect the whole row? Can you collect, two rows behind you type of thing? That's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I always thought that was fascinating. Which also, leads me to say, I never could understand in our hobby why there wasn't greater demand for a ticket stub with the game program. You got
yeah.
the ticket stub from the game. Now you got the game program, or vice versa. It's just lately, probably over the last 20 years, that really started picking up as far as collectability, and it started picking up as far as demand was concerned. So, again, I could never understand that. I went to a game, I made sure I kept the ticket stub, and I kept the program. To me, they go hand in hand, to say the least. But you're right, the premium that is paid for that kind of preciseness and location, so on and so forth, is becoming greater and greater as time goes on. And again, something we talked about, if we talked about it once, we talked about it 100 times over the years, how many of these stubs actually and tickets actually survived? How many programs survived?
Mm-hmm.
Especially from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and now looking at the 50s and 60s also. There's not a lot of them out there, contrary to what everybody thinks there is. And I just see
year.
It. Go ahead.
Less and less every year. House fires, floods,
yep.
rodents, you name it, just getting deteriorated by time. I mean, every year there's less and less. Somebody passes away and a collection of what's this old program? What's this old newspaper? That's disgusting. Nobody would want that, and it gets tossed. I mean, if 12,000
yep.
people attended a very rare football game and only, 2,000 of them saved their ticket and program, and, that was 90 years ago, just natural attrition. Yeah, it's fascinating to think about. We'll never, ever know.
Right. Well, I see our guest is here, and we're going to move along in our show. And just to wrap up what we said, I still believe very, very strongly, and you're very correct, Joe, as far as collecting sets and what is popular, what isn't popular. I always feel, and I continue to say, your childhood sets usually are your most favorite as you go on in life, and there's not much that can change that. All right, at this time, I'd like to introduce our special guest. He's a longtime collector and expert on all things pertaining to post-serial football and baseball cards, who's also authored the book entitled Goalposts, the 1962 Post-Serial Card Football Promotion. I'd like to welcome to the show tonight a true hobby icon, Mr. Ken Marks. Ken, welcome to the show this evening.
Well, thank you. Very much appreciate the opportunity to talk with you guys.
Well, we thank you for
Ken,
coming on.
Ken, that's the first time I've heard. Ken, that's the first time I've heard Bob refer to somebody as a true hobby icon.
Yeah. Well, he's got the wrong person.
Well, Ken, if you're not a hobby icon, I don't know what a hobby icon is. That's all I have to say. And I'm going to lead off by asking you, how did you become interested in football and collecting?
Okay, well, like a lot of us, Bob, I started as a kid. Collected both football and baseball, beginning around maybe 1959, 1960, and primarily Topps, only then, as really that's the only cards that our local grocery store sold. And and while I like them both, I really like football better because, you know, back then there was just less players in a set, and you had a reasonable chance to complete a set. The baseball cards had like 7 series, and most of those series never ever made it to our store. So there you didn't have a prayer of completing a set. So football just was better in my estimation. Then when I got older, I lost interest in collecting. But back in the 70s, I started buying complete sets because I saw them in Sporting News where you could buy complete sets. And I don't know why I did it, but I just did it. And then I think the breakthrough was a couple years later, I was over at our local college. I live in Sacramento, so this is Sacramento State. And just walking by the basketball gym, and they were having a card show. And I didn't even know card shows existed. And I walked through, and I thought it was just great. And then sometime shortly after, I was in a magazine store and just kind of browsing and ran across one of the early editions of Baseball Card Magazine. Had a picture of Pete Rose on the cover. And right then I said to myself, hey, I have that card. And that night after work, I went over to my parents' house, retrieved all my baseball cards. They weren't really in too good a shape, but I grabbed them, and it didn't really matter. I was hooked.
Nice.
Wow.
59 and 60. Talk about two iconic sets. I mean, 59, all the colors, just beautiful, and 60, just in its simplicity, starting right off with Johnny U, right on the, you know, no, oh, wait a minute, is Alan Ameshi card number one in that? Who is that?
If you're asking me, I've kind of gone away from the top stuff, so I'm much more a post guy over the years, so I couldn't really get into that. But
60 tops number one is Unitas, so this is the most iconic.
Is it Unitas?
Card,
okay.
Yeah, of him, his face being out of complete. He made a face while he was getting his picture taken, so it looks almost like he had a few drinks or whatever. So I mean, it's just,
it does. Okay, yeah, I put that set together years ago.
And again, the 1960 set was only 132 cards, so it's very, very easy to put together. I put together probably 10 sets over the years of the 60 tops football. I mean, I always loved that set.
Yeah.
It was so cool. And a great set.
Johnny U, head tilted. But, man, 62 post serial, this set is so complicated. And we've had a few guests on who just talk about the intricacies of it and just, you know, the different – you know, variations of it. I mean, you know, you mentioned 59 and 60, but, you know, how'd you turn that into getting into the 62 post serial set?
Oh, okay. Well, at the time I retrieved those cards from my parents' house, there were some post serials mixed into those. I'm at the age where I certainly remember cutting them off the boxes back in the early 60s. And I've always kind of gravitated towards the 60 stuff because that's what I collected as a kid. So once I started building my collection, it was kind of a combination of post-serial and tops for both baseball and football. But then over the years, I just gravitated away from the mainstream football sets and starting I put the great majority of my efforts into post-football. And the post baseball too. I just find the post serial, like you're saying, just much more interesting and challenging. And the more challenge you want, you can find it in post serial. Because, you know, like you say, back in the early 60s, the sets varied a bit, but you know, they basically were smaller, 132 cards, and eventually a few more with the tops. But post-serial, just way different. They had 200 cards, and if you wanted to collect the basic 200, you could do that. But you can also do really a whole lot more with the post-serial football. You can go for, and I heard the last guest you had on the last podcast talk about a master set in post-serial. I think that was Fred.
Yeah.
And,
right.
And a lot of the serious collectors go for that. That's one card. It's a card of each serial box, off of each serial box that they produced. And so while there's 200 cards in a set, there's most of the players were on at least several different boxes. For example, I think Jim Brown's on 3 different cereal boxes, and Johnny Unitas on 5 different cereal boxes, and each of them are a little different. And you can spot them. You can see the differences. Some are easy to see. Some are much tougher. So, you know, instead of 200 cards, if you go for a master set, that's like well over 500 cards. And,
wow.
And while Johnny Unitas and Jim Brown and all the rest might be easy to find for the most part, if you're going for a 200-card set, some of those variations are just brutal and very, very tough to find. It's a big challenge going for a master set. And that's, you can do that with post-serial. You really don't have that opportunity with a lot of other sets. And I think that's the reason that that I like the postcard so much.
Well, I want to establish one thing. What is the actual count again for the master set? Is it 512 cards, or is it still an unknown amount?
We're talking for the post-serial football.
Yeah.
Okay. It's kind of one of two numbers, and I know you guys are both on the BFC website where that discussion has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
What happened is there's a question of whether one of the cereal sizes and flavors was issued, and that's these large Oat Flakes cards. So while panels exist, they may not have actually made it to the grocery store. So so it's a 528 if you don't count those, and 99 panels having 528 cards. If you're counting those and they do exist, and you know that's up for the discussion still, then it's all the way up to 556 and another 4 panels. So
okay,
yeah.
All right, so I'm putting it in my notes right now because I was always curious about it, and for whatever reason, knowing it's over 500 cards, again, being a little off script here, how many complete master sets do you think actually exist, if any?
Well, yeah, if we're going from, and I'm not counting the Oak Lakes, because right now,
right.
I think as Robin has pointed out, there's really only 2 of those panels that are known. So
right.
I would think most people don't count those, but
okay,
yeah, I would think we're probably
we're looking more at the 528 card set rather than the larger set. That's what I'm going to assume.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely, and
okay.
There can't be more than just a couple at this point, because several of the ones are several of the cards are tough to tell apart from the others, particularly the ones that came on a serial called Top 3. So there's a lot that are probably have near master sets, but only a couple probably that have complete master sets at this point.
Okay.
Fascinating. What a nuanced set. I love it. So from what I'm picking up, it's the master set is considered to be uncut boxes, backs of boxes. or are they variations of other cards? Like, you know, whether one was, you know, one type of cereal and another one is another type of cereal.
Exactly. It's the second. They're individual cards.
Okay.
And it's one card off each box. So because Johnny Unitas was on five different boxes, you would need five. Each of the cereal boxes that Johnny Unitas appeared on, so five cards.
Wow, fascinating! It's incredible. Talk about a rabbit hole. I love it.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And how many people just give that up? Because like I collect the 48 Leaf set. I mean, and I kind of stopped worrying about the variations. White between knees, Johnny misspelled, there's all these little variations, and I just kind of gave up because a lot of those are just printer's defects.
Yeah, in baseball and football, there's very few people, I think, that go after the master set.
Right.
We're probably talking less than 20.
Do you have the master set completed, I would imagine?
Yes.
Okay.
Wow.
That's a pretty small fraternity, I would imagine.
I had a head start on a lot of people.
You and Captain Bo. If you've got the master set completed, I imagine you collect other stuff outside of 62 tops, cereal. What would you consider like the top, six items in your collection? What are your favorites?
I guess the number one would be, I've got a complete unfolded box, and it's a Great Nuts Flakes. It's a small size box, and it's the most rare cereal, the rare because it didn't sell much, so there's not that many out there. But it's got Dave Baker and Sam Baker on it, and they're the two toughest cards there are in the set. So
nobody likes Grape Nuts.
I was talking to somebody the other day, and they said they did, and I couldn't believe it. I'm with you. So that's
what
a
else
good
you got?
One.
Okay, Baker brothers.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got a large store advertising sign that hung over the cereal in the aisles that Post produced and passed out to the stores. It's got Johnny Unitas on it, Billy Kilmer on it, and Paul Hornung on it, and I think there's only one other gentleman that I know you both know. Kirk Robinson has that other one. Somehow he wrestled away from Mike Blaisdell a few years ago. So that's a nice piece.
you just did a lot of name dropping there, Ken. That was pretty good. From Kirk to Mike. That's hobby royalty right there.
Yeah, oh, I agree. I agree. We've got a Post 10 variety pack, and what that is what Post put out with these little boxes of cereal, they still do today along with Kellogg's, kind of individual sizes, and they came 10 to a package and wrapped in cellophane. And cards were on the bottom, three cards on the bottom and one card on the alphabets box, a little tiny box inside. And I have a complete one of those still in the cellophane. So that's nice. Again, Kirk has one, wrestled away from Mike a few years ago. Must have been a great trade they had.
Yeah, exactly.
What else? Post cereal football oat flakes box, the other box that Dave Baker was on. So, and that one's a complete box, no cereal, but a complete box in pretty good shape, and probably a one of one type deal. Like we talked about, I've got a ton of panels in all the different sports. So I certainly don't have them all, but I have a goodly number of them. And I really like those because that's something I've worked on for a long time. I guess lastly, I also collect Kellogg's, the Kellogg's football cards. They were only in for 2 years.
48.
I misspoke. 1970 and 1971 is the ones that I am talking about because those are the ones I collected. And they're kind of 3D cards, and they've got a special coating on the front, and they look way different than others. And posted a lot of years of baseball, and I don't know why they stopped it too for football, but I've got those sets PSA registered, and they're the top sets on the registry, so I'm proud of those also.
What is the rarest card in the 62? I've heard of the Baker, but what's the toughest one?
Oh, without a question, I think it's Dave Baker. He was number one, probably Sam Baker number two, and probably got Angela Coya maybe number three. But Dave's the hardest. And the reason is it all depends on what cereal a player is put on and what size. In terms of the cereal, flavor, people don't buy it, people like it. If it's an adult cereal, well, those cards are going to be rare, as opposed to the ones with all the sugar in it. If it's a small size, well, they're going to be rarer because moms tended to buy the large size, the more convenient size, and dads, though not convenient, the more cost-effective sizes. Small boxes didn't sell as well, so there's less of those cards. So that's one of the things with post cereal. You know, they didn't put out X amount of every other card. These cards, the availability is all over the map, and it just depends on what cereal you appeared on and the size of that cereal. But Dave Baker.
So Dave Baker only appeared on the small, grape nut box, is what you're saying.
He appeared, yes, on that one, which is by far the rarest and least selling. And he also appeared on one other, which was an oat flake box, a small oat flake box, which also wasn't a big seller. And
right.
Sam Baker, his second one was on the variety pack that we just talked about, the post tens, which have a limited number of cards too. So most players,
he's rare
appearing.
Go ahead, Ken.
No, I'm saying most players made two appearances, but if you got put on two rare panels, You become a very tough card, as those guys did.
So the Baker brothers are rare because they only appeared on the small single-serving boxes, and both single-serving boxes they appeared on were adult, non-sugary cereals. So that's the 1-2 punch.
Well, yeah, I would say they were both on the Grape Nuts, a small box of Grape Nuts, not a super small individual size. And then the other Baker was on the variety pack on the bottom of the tray, a Dave Baker, and Sam Baker was Sam Baker on the tray and Dave Baker on a smaller box, not an individual box, but a smaller box of Oat Flakes. So, yeah, just non-sellers.
Okay. That tells a story. The Bakers, I just remind me of Zeke Ratkowski in the 57 top set. I mean, nobody's heard of the football players, the Baker brothers, because they're no one of consequence. It's, unless you're a Pittsburgh fan, Zeke Ratkowski, nobody's heard of. But if you collect a 57 tops football, you realize he's the rarest card, So it's one of those nuances of a set that I just love.
I agree.
That's interesting. When I finished my 62 post set years ago, the two cards I needed were both Bakers. So it's very true. It's very rare. Now, tying into this, you wrote a book, Ken, and can you talk a little bit about it? It's called Goalposts, the 1962 Post Serial Football Serial Card Football Promotion.
Okay. That book, it had its origins back in the middle to late 90s. I collected, like I said, all the different types of post-serial card products, be it the Canadian or the American and the baseball and whatnot. And there's a gentleman named Dan Mabee, and he was back east. He recently moved back home to California. But back then he put out these books, individual books on each of the American baseball post serial promotions, and it talked about all the intricacies and what cards were on what serials and why some cards are tougher than others, what's in a master set, all sorts of different things. And that wasn't information that was known in the hobby back then. A lot of us learned a whole ton about it because of his efforts. But he was just a baseball guy, and we became friends, and he knew I had a big interest in football, so he pushed me. He wanted me to write kind of a companion book for football. And I did. I wrote it, but back then my computer skills were limited, so I had all the information. I had it organized, but it was on Excel spreadsheets, and it was Microsoft Word sheets, and it wasn't really in a book format. And then over the years, he would push. Another gentleman in Los Angeles, Dave Worley, would push me. And finally, it was about 2017, Dave says, "Hey, let's put that book out. I'll help you." And he had all the knowledge, and he could put the information together into a book. And about a year later, we had it published, and I'm pretty proud of it. It's about half narrative and half pictures of all the different stuff that goes with it. And it would have never come out without Dave's help. he was great. He did something I couldn't do.
How cool is that?
Wow.
If I might, I'd like to add one more thing. And again, this goes back to Kirk Robinson, but you know, back when I was putting this together, I became aware of Kirk, and we only lived 30 minutes apart, which is amazing. But as I went and visited him, and at the time that this was, he was getting out of the post football collectibles, and he had other collectible interests, toys, as I remember. But he had done the same research work that I did, only he had done it in the 80s. And we didn't have the internet in the 80s. He did it by mail. and then it was great. These meetings with Kirk were great. And I walked away with a couple things. I got a lot of his stuff because he was going a different direction. And so that helped my collection, mm-hmm. as it did other collectors. But what it also did for the book was, we talked a lot about our thinking on the serials and how it was all set up and everything. And independently, we'd done two separate studies, and they were identical. They came to the same conclusions, and that just gave me a ton of confidence that I was on the right track. And I'm very appreciative to Kirk for those meetings back 20, 25 years ago. So I'm a fan of his, obviously.
That's amazing.
Kirk was probably focusing on his 68 Topps collection.
Yeah, he's got all sorts of stuff. He's quite a collector.
Yeah, man. Just out of curiosity, how many copies of that book have you sold? I'm just curious how popular a book like that is.
I sold more than I thought. I was really just doing it, you know, as kind of my contribution to the hobby. I still sell two or three a month, and I probably have hit triple digits, so I'm really rich off it. No, which is more than I thought I'd ever sell, so I'm happy with it. But that part, if it sells, it sells. If it doesn't, it doesn't.
Good for you. Nice. I apologize. I think I got a little excited and asked a question out of order. But so I mean, you've obviously you hit the top of the mountain with your post serials. So, I mean, what other things do you collect? What else do you focus on?
I pretty much got rid of all my top stuff 5 or 6 years ago. So I'm the Kellogg sets that I talked about, I go for a lot of 49ers stuff, Salada coins and stuff like that from 62.
Oh, nice.
The football bucks, but it's oddball, just like Post Zero, I got 180 of the 200 ones, 200 players, signed cards. So it's things like that.
Very cool. So a lot of coins seem to be pretty popular amongst our guests, Bob.
They're pretty neat.
Ken, collecting all these years, do you have any interesting stories you like to share with our audience on collecting?
Okay. I've got one maybe. That Post 10 variety package I was talking about, 10 little cereals in a little tray in cellophane. I bought that back on eBay maybe 2001, something like that. And,
oh, wow.
And to give the story a little bit of context, the Post Serial football promotion was going on right in the middle of the Cuban Missile Crisis back in 1962, which is something I certainly remember. But anyway, I won this item, and afterwards I asked the seller, where did you find something like this? Because it's in just tip-top shape. And what he told me that it had recently been found in a forgotten bomb shelter built, before that time. And the shelter, it had been forgotten for years and years and years, and then somebody discovered it. They cracked it open and went inside, and one of the things they found was a post-tens pack, this post-tens package with the football cards on it. Totally amazing. And so, it makes a lot of sense, too. I mean, that's something I might put in a bomb shelter back in 1962.
So it was somebody's, just in case the world ends, this is we want to take this cereal with us. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember bomb shelters, not too many, but several around us had them back then.
Yeah, and you mostly kept canned food in there, non-perishable food, water kept in a can, believe it or not.
Yeah.
And some very, very old type bottles. I remember that. I distinctly remember that over the years. And I'm wondering too, I wonder how many forgotten bomb shelters are there out there? There are probably quite a few that people don't even know about. And what could be lurking in them at that? And it's pretty amazing. Wow.
Yeah. Good stuff.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Ken, what keeps you up at night? What do you scour eBay and auctions for? What's your white whale right now?
Well, I guess if I had one white whale, it would be related to the post. And again, talking about the post 10 trades, that was 10 serials. Post put out the same thing, only six card. It was called Treat Pack. There were not six cards, six little small boxes. A variety pack also, and it tended to be the non-sugary and the adult flavors. And for a long time, folks weren't even sure if that was part of the promotion, because you just never ever saw any of them. It was sketched in one of the advertisements, but that's it. No one knew if it was part of the promotion. And then this year, back in maybe March, one of those came up on eBay, and looked like a great, great, maybe a bomb shelter find, I don't know, but in great shape. And the guy didn't know what he had it, and he put it up, buy it now, $50, and somebody bought it right away. And not a post cereal collector, not a cereal collector, not a sports card collector. And then a few months later, I don't know, July, whenever Robert Edwards auctions came out, that item had made its way to it, and it went up for bidding. And I certainly don't have one. And I was a strong bidder, but there were two that were stronger. And that thing went for, if you count the juice and the tax with the bid amount, over $11,000. So,
wow.
Yeah. It matters. Robin Pauls, who I believe has been on your show before, and I think you guys know, he was the winning bidder. He's got a great item.
I live in perpetual fear of something going up as a bin on eBay and, something I've been looking for a decade and missing it. you know, perpetual fear that, you know, I get a text from Bob saying, hey, did you see that 35 Chickle uncut sheet that was on eBay and been, you know, been for $3,000? Did you get it? And I'm like, no! Oh, my gosh, $50.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And that pack
somebody was
that
very happy.
39 cents back in 62. Amazing.
Somebody
well,
was
know,
very happy with that pickup. So, $50.
If you really think about it, they did have a lot of promotional stuff in the stores. So it would be logical to assume some of that has to actually survive over the years, which you guys have documented very, very well, you know, of, as far as supermarket promotions, so on and so forth. They're probably end cap displays, whatever it may be. So that cardboard, that paper still can be, you know, still be found, I'm sure. And again, it's a question of how many got tossed right after the promotion and how many actually got saved. And I still say that today. If I see something, especially in a package store, for like, let's say, a football display, whoever, you know, the cardboard cutout of Brady or somebody promoting a wine or beer or whatever, how many of those actually survive, you know, type of thing. And now it's much more difficult to obtain because a lot of people working in the store keep them rather than letting customers get them, so on and so forth. So those are pretty amazing pieces to have preserved over the years.
You know what's funny, Bob? I might be wrong on this, but I mean, I don't know. Just because things are, you know, so produced nowadays, I don't know if, you know, like I said, it could be wrong. I mean, will there be the same nostalgia for, you know, Tom Brady peddling, you know, Budweiser, you know, in 30 years as there is now for Johnny Unitas, you know, banner? I mean, you know, it's, I don't know. I wonder. I mean, you know, are we throwing away stuff now that we're like, oh, this is junk?
My gut feeling is I think there's always going to be a demand for it wherever that demand takes it. And I really believe anything paper over the past 5 years is going to be very, very rare as far as the collectibles is concerned. And this year, more than anything, as far as football programs and ticket stubs, they're virtually non-existent. Because there's no fans going to the games, and I don't even know how many teams are actually printing the programs anymore. So it's super rare. I know in pocket schedules, the whole hobby got walloped this year because so many teams, you know, didn't play, changed schedules, they didn't produce anything, so on and so forth. Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but I always think it'll be there. I really do. I don't think, you know, a collector is a collector. And our collecting generation that I won't see 30, 40 years from now, it could be very different, but at the same time, I still see there's going to be a demand for that stuff. That's just my opinion. I don't know. I could be completely wrong because I hear all the time, you know, young people today don't collect anything. But, you know, I still see a lot of young teenagers and guys in their 20s at shows buying cards. You know what I mean? So I don't necessarily buy into that. You know?
No. It's weird. Think back, I mean, even – oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, as much as there's the naysayers out there, I really don't see it. I still see a lot of people collect them. And I think, you know, collecting is healthy. It's a great outlet. It's fun. It's historical. You learn a lot, and you have a sense of an accomplishment when you collect a set or a rut of something, so on and so forth. You know, I mean, you know, look at yourself. The sense of accomplishment you must feel from your collection is enormous. And that's an amazing collection, to say the least. So, you know, I think everything's got to be put in perspective. But, you know, it's a good point, Joe. You know, what is being saved today? I really don't know. And I'm still a pack rat, so I still save everything. So,
But, I mean, you know, look at this. This is cereal. This is, you know, who would have thought in 62 – You know, same thing with the Wheaties boxes. I mean, these were
crucial.
I mean, you know, even going back to 78, 79, just, there's potato chips, Nally's potato chips at Seahawk promotions. I mean, so much of this stuff was, I mean, you know, one of my favorite things is I wrote about this in a Gridiron article about a Red Grange banner. It's like 9 feet long and 3 feet tall promoting his call-in show for, you know, the college picks. I mean, it's made of cloth.
Right.
Obviously, it went in a mechanics bay, and this thing's so rare. you know, what was just trash a long time ago. I don't know. Maybe I'm a little bit skeptical, maybe too skeptical about it. But I mean, even unopened wax nowadays, it's just, you know, there's 30 different wax boxes, you know, every year.
Right.
So, I mean,
but I can
know,
guarantee you,
think about how many.
In them.
Yeah, yeah, you're
somebody's
probably right. Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
I can't work.
They better
Ken,
have a lot of room.
We're almost out of time. We're almost out of time. Can you give us any advice for beginning collectors and any final thoughts?
I think it's simply what you collect what you like. You know, I know some people, money comes into play in terms of looking for appreciation, but I just don't think that works. Just go after what you like, and, you know, you'll be happy.
I agree 100%. Ken, for people who are looking for your book, where can they find it?
It's on Amazon. It's called Goalposts, the 1962 football promotion. I tried to keep the price down, so it's $30, and if you got the Amazon Prime, free delivery. So, and that's the only place you can get it.
Okay, and hopefully you're going to see it. You're going to see a jump in sales after this show, I'm sure.
I'll let you know.
From our audience.
The gridiron great.
Thanks for being on tonight. We appreciate it, and I'm sure we'll be talking in the future.
Oh, you're very welcome. You guys have a great show. I really like it. Thank you.
Thank
you.
Thank you.
1962 Post. Expert Ken Marks. Joe, we're down to about 2 minutes. I'm going to hand off to you. And our two-minute warning and wrap-up, what'd you pick up on tonight's show?
What a small hobby we have. I love it. I mean, just even the people that, you know, Ken was reaching out to, you know, Kirk and Mike, you know, about this collection. It's just you know, icons of our hobby. It just makes me smile. Just so many good, classy people who are so willing to share their knowledge of our beloved hobby. And, you know, that's what it's all about to me. I'm just so happy to see it.
I agree with you 100% on that, too, because if we don't share our knowledge, we can't grow the hobby, and we can't get more people interested in it. And I always said to myself over the years, the two sets from the early 60s, that 62 post set and the 62 Salada T-Coin sets, I'm not getting rid of for a long, long time. I just love those two sets. They were tough to collect. And, you know, I got them in binders. I love looking at them. And probably I pulled out that 62 post set over the week since I knew we had Fred and Ken on in a two-week period, and brought back a lot of fun memories, remembering when I picked up some cards, so on and so forth. And just good set. But I just don't have it in me to do the 528 MasterCard set. I can't do that.
Just classy,
right now, so.
classy, good collectors coming on the show, and I enjoy it. So,
it's cool. All right, we're down to less than a minute. Again, if you don't subscribe to Gridiron Greats Magazine, what are you waiting for? Check out our website
for
subscription and back issue information. And I got to say this: our back issues are going very rapidly. So, if you want a complete run from issue 23 when we started until our current issue, please act fast, because we're down to like 2 and 3 copies of a lot of the early issues, and once they're gone, they're gone. You're going to have a rough time trying to complete that run. All right, we're down to 30 seconds. Joe, any final thoughts? Quick.
Not much. I laid it out.
That was a great show. Enjoyed it. And
yeah,
very interesting to learn everything there is to know about a 62 post set, and I highly recommend his book on the 62 post set if you're going to start out and try to collect that. All right, that's it for tonight. Thanks for listening. And again, check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. Take care.
Ba, 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 ba.